Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to Educational HR Radio. Today, we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic, and it actually is the title of a book. It's called Quiet Leader, Loud Results, How Quiet Leaders Drive Outcomes That Speak for Themselves. Our guest today is Ankit Mahadevia. So, you know, first of all, give us a little bit about your background. Tell us about, you know, your history, where you came from, how you decided to get to write this book, you know, kind of a little bit about your story.
Yeah, thanks, David. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm a physician by training, though my journey started, much earlier than that. My parents came here from India back in the 70s. My father had two opportunities to go to a university. One was at California Berkeley, one was at the University of Illinois. And he chose Illinois because he had a third cousin in Ohio. When you look at the map, it's closer. So we were Chicago born and raised. For very early in my life, I realized that I'm a quiet person and an introvert. And in our culture, you know, you do a lot of social gatherings and you demonstrate your commitment to the people around you by being an extrovert. And so I learned pretty early that it was a tough place to be. And that's something I've had to contend with, you know, all the way through. I realized early as well that I wanted to dedicate my life to making sick people feel better. And so I've done that in a variety of different ways. I started my career with in a different space, which was public policy. I worked for the U.S. Congress. And then after that, I was in management consulting, where I helped healthcare companies solve some of their strategy issues. In that time, I saw a lot of doctors that were doing different things for patients. And I said, well, I would regret it if I didn't learn how to help patients. And so I went to medical training, which I did at Johns Hopkins. After that, I did a variety of different, I call them odd jobs, trying to figure out what I wanted to do to help patients. I went to business school at the Wharton School. I went to a big drug company at Genentech. I worked on leveraged buyouts for a period of time. And at some point, my dean said, well, are you going to be a doctor or not? I said, okay, fine, I guess I am. And this was the time that I was just getting married, and a venture capital firm that I've now been affiliated for over a decade called me and said, you know, why don't you spend a few months building new companies? And I said, never done that. That's cool. Do you pay? They said, yeah. And I said, great. I got a bunch of,
I like that,
of student loan debt. And that I caught the bug in terms of building new companies. And over that period of time, and now it's been about, gosh, David, 13, 14 years, I've started 9 different companies that, make new medicines for patients. Some of them have gone on to develop drugs that you'll see advertised on football games. And I'm currently running one of them that helps develop medicines that impact infectious disease. So, you know, along my career, I've managed to make a go of it, though the hardest thing for me was how can I, when I don't like being the loudest person in the room, take the mantle as leader? And much earlier in my career, or even at parties, I just wanted to be sitting in the back, let other people take the airtime and credit. I wanted to crunch numbers and data and let other people advance. But then, you know, I didn't get the chance to build the things I wanted or take the career progression that I wanted to. And so over time, I tried things like faking it. So I even with my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, we took an improv class together because I said, hey, maybe I can learn how to interject in a conversation and be loud. It went terribly, David. No one wanted to see me do improv. And, you know, I also tried faking it. And I had this kind of come to, you know, kind of this seminal moment where I was given my first opportunity to try to build a company and lead a team. And for the smallest setback, there's always hard setbacks in terms of developing new medicines. Everyone scattered and went off to do other things. And I said, why? This wasn't that big a deal. And it turns out someone sat me down and had a very hard conversation and said, well, no one knows what's on your mind. No one feels like they can fully trust you because it feels like you're trying to be something you're not. And it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. And I realized I got to do something differently. And so over the next few years, I found my own style. I found a way to be me, but still be effective in leading companies. And that's what inspired the book. My hope in writing the book is that me from 20 years ago could read it and go through a lot less beating himself up and perhaps bumble through trying to learn to be a leader a lot more quickly. And so the book is both scientific in that it provides a scientific understanding of why quiet people can be great leaders. It then goes into what it takes to lead. And then it's very practical. You know, I seek the help of 30 other successful quiet leaders that have found their own style. And we go into practical things like, well, how do you do networking as a leader that's quiet? How do you make a speech that really delivers great results? How do you convince someone to join your mission when this is as excited as you get? And that's the focus of the book. And I really hope it can help people either that are leading but feel like they have to fake it, or people that feel like, well, I want to do great things in my career. I want to lead, but I don't think I can because society tells us that you got to be loud and really enjoy being with people to do it.
It's interesting. Obviously, you're very in tune with the introvert versus extrovert part of the personality. And as you know, people are who they are, and that's how that kind of works. But the reality is I also know that a lot of introverts are some of the best leaders in the world in terms of when you listen and you know that Elon Musk and some of them are all introverts when you actually talk to and look up and read what they're all about. And the fact that some of the best salespeople in the world are introverts, namely because they listen, right? They think before they speak and instead of just speaking before they think. So it's a very interesting dynamic that you talk about because there are an awful lot of leaders who do try to fake it. Part of coaching is talking to these people and looking at how they perform and how they are seen and viewed. And sometimes they take it very personally. How did you go through that change of recognizing that, you had to make a change of yourself? Because that's very hard for people to introspectively look at that.
Well, it's one of the superpowers of being an introvert is you're more apt to reflection and inner thought. And so, that kind of comes naturally to me. And for me and a lot of the other quiet leaders I talk to, it's really about the mission you choose to achieve in life. And, for me, I realized that, what I wanted to do is find a way to work every day to make sick people feel better, whether that's one patient at a time as a doctor or if you develop medicines, maybe many thousands of patients at a time. I realized I couldn't do it unless I found a style that was going to work for me. And I certainly couldn't do it for a many year career. So that was hard. And it just began a long process of, collaborating with mentors and, really trying to do trial and error. And you're absolutely right, David, that a lot of us that are quiet leaders feel like we've got to hide it. I'll tell you, I did a lot of interviews for this book, and I interviewed a woman who's a really well-known executive recruiter in our space. And I didn't interview her because I thought that she was an introvert. I interviewed her because I thought, well, a lot of executives, maybe you'll give me some perspective. Because I thought, what kind of, executive recruiter is an introvert, given all the people that she would talk to? And she knocked my socks off when I said, well, I have to tell you something. I'm an extreme introvert. After a day of talking to candidates, I need hours to just decompress and be ready for the next day. And it was amazing to me that she felt like she's also someone who said, well, don't name me in the book because I don't want to be known as an introverted executive recruiter. And on one hand, I was amazed that even for me, who spent the last couple of years trying to understand the difference between introvert and extrovert, I didn't know she faked it that well. One, and two, that she felt like she had to. And I'm hoping that through the book and some of the conversations we're having, that we can normalize this. Leaders are leaders. They can be introverts or extroverts. And you're absolutely right, David. There's some very, very successful introverted leaders. You name some of them. Bill Gates is another that are introverts, and they've managed to be very effective.
I don't remember where I heard this, and it was on some podcast. I'd love to give credit for it, but I can't recall right now who it was. It talked about the fact of I want to say it was 8 out of the 10 top billionaires in the world are all introverts. And it was something about 7 out of the top 10 highest salespeople paid in the world are introverts. And I found that to be fascinating. And this podcast was really about, in this case, I think it was a Myers-Briggs type podcast talking about personalities, and they were kind of going through the, you know, the different personalities of individuals. So anyways, the bottom line is I did find this fascinating that someone who really can digest information, process that information and provide that information in a thoughtful way, it kind of makes sense when you think about it, that they could be an effective leader, that they could be an effective salesperson, that they can be an effective individual. What challenges sometimes is the fact that others see you in a different light. You mentioned it a few minutes ago, how this top executive recruiter was like, oh my God, don't tell anyone. You know, I need to hide behind the curtain. When in fact, why do you think that is? Why do you think that there's, I'll use the word and I use it lightly, but a fear, an actual fear of being quote unquote found out that you're an introvert? That's interesting to me.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, David. And I think it's because society, and I think particularly American society, has this stereotype of an effective leader or a business leader. You know, I'll tell you a story. I'm a student of leadership. So one of my focus areas when I was in business school was leadership. So I was in the leadership seminar. And what they did every week was they went through some of the key activities of leadership and gave us examples of how to do it right. And so the lecture that week was, how do you get a group excited? So the professor says, well, part of your job as a leader is going to be getting groups of people excited about your mission. Here's an example. And so then he plays a tape of Steve Ballmer, who is the CEO of Microsoft. Steve is a prototypical extrovert. And I'm watching him for 15 minutes. He's having a conference with his software programmers, his developers. And he's screaming. He's taking off layers of clothing. He's sweating. He's running around the stage until he's hoarse. And I think about that. And I say, you know, I turn to one of my classmates. I said, there's no amount of mind-altering drugs that could get me that excited about anything.
And you work with drugs, so I understand that. Maybe that's the next developer. That's the 10th company. Okay, that's the 10th company.
There you go. So you know, even in places that teach leadership, we are teaching people that the ideal of effective tactics around leadership is extroverted. And I think that's just wrong. I'll tell you, I mean, my own experience and that of the 30 other leaders we spoke to, they definitely can get people excited about a mission without having to scream at the top of their lungs. You just have to do it differently. So in the book, we go into a bunch of very practical suggestions that people have used to be effective. And there's also a toolkit we go into. If you step back and you think about what are all the things quiet leaders use to do, you know, to approach leadership in their own way? How do they get individuals excited about their cause? How do they get groups excited about their cause? How do they get things done? There's a few basic things that always seem to come up. Things like being prepared ahead of time, things like being transparent, really taking pains to be transparent, even though much of your emotion and thoughts is inside, not demonstrated on the outside. It's things like collaborating, working with your team and mentors to make the most out of your leadership. And these things come up again and again. And my point being that it's not magic to be an effective leader. You, as with everything that's challenging, you take it into its component parts and you hit it piece by piece. And that's what we try to do in the book.
No, and the book gives a really good understanding. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. But I have one last question as we wrap up this segment here. You know, what made you decide to actually write the book? Because that's the next step above, you know, just talking about it or going out and having a conversation with individuals. What brought you to the decision to write a book? And I believe this is your first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is my first. And so, you know, it's two things, David. The first is that it's an issue that's been of the top of my mind for the long time that I've been, you know, learning how to be a leader, still learning. So that's number one. It's the lens through which I viewed a lot of the way that I've had to grow as a leader. Number two is just good old fashioned circumstance. And so, you know, it was the kind of the depths of the pandemic lockdown in 2020 where I had a lot more time to think and reflect. And, you know, as a, you know, prototypical introvert, I do that by writing and started to write a little bit about it, started to expand. And the other thing that I did was I have a group of, you know, most quiet leaders that you kind of bounce things off of, because we're a proud and kind of under the radar bunch, as you might expect. And we realized something, which is that when you had the pandemic lockdown, a lot of the ways that not quiet leaders and we would lead weren't possible anymore. And we said, well, it's kind of this controlled experiment where you can't do the things that a prototypical leader can, like get everyone in a room and we still ended up being effective. And it was further proof for us that, hey, we don't have to lead in the prototypical fashion and we can still be effective. And it's at that point that I started to use some of that time when I'm not on planes or doing meetings to start writing. And it's been a lot of fun doing it.
No, you obviously took a lot of time and effort into it. And it's interesting about that group that you're part of. And I'd be in, and we'll certainly talk a little bit more about it. You're, of course, listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
Hey, you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you are listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Of course, it is podcast on all national podcast channels. You can go to hrpowerhour.com, or you can also go to wlobradio.com on Saturday at 10 a.m. That's Eastern Time, 10 a.m. We look forward to having you listen, learn, and share. Okay, today we are talking about a new book, Quiet Leader, Loud Results: How Quiet Leaders Drive Outcomes That Speak for Themselves. And as I've told Ankit, I'm trying so hard on his last name. And, you know, I should know better. Chulo, C-I-U-L-O, gets all sorts of, you know, Italian verses. But Ankit Mahadevia, you know, let's talk about the book itself. What's your favorite chapter in the book?
My favorite chapter is it's so hard to choose. It's like choosing amongst your children. But my favorite chapters is chapter three in the book. It's kind of this hybrid of really laying out the reasons why quiet leaders can be effective, and then putting out the framework that quiet leaders can use to be effective. And then after that, each chapter dives into one of those key activities, whether it's, you know, setting a strategy or getting your team to get things done or getting people excited about the cause. But that one chapter is really, if you were to read one, I think that a quiet leader who's kind of on the fence, well, should I lead? Should I keep faking it? Read that chapter, and I feel like I hope you come away, you know, excited about trying to build something bigger than yourself, and you know, feel like there's a roadmap for you to do it effectively.
When you were writing the book, I'm assuming you wrote it in sections or chapters or different topics that you worked through. But take kind of through what your thought process was and how you came up with I'll call it a how-to book, how to get to this point, rather than just a book about, you know, the success you've had in it.
Yeah, and so I mean, maybe it's with my personality type. I absolutely didn't want to make the book about me and my experiences, although they're very helpful in terms of that. I wanted it to be a very practical how-to manner. So I did what we do when we tackle tough problems. We broke it down into its component parts, and then I wrote each component in terms of the how-to. So we break down leadership into a few key practices. So number one is understanding the world around you and setting a strategy for your organization. Number two is executing on that strategy. Number three is winning hearts and minds to your cause on a one-on-one basis, like an investor or a new hire. And then the final one is getting a group of people excited about your mission. And we, you know, that's how we did it. And then you dive into each one of those components, because as I step back and, you know, everyone has their own framework, I think those are four things that every leader, doesn't matter if you're leading a hospital, you're leading a nonprofit, or, you know, a biotech business, has to do. And then it kind of just, you know, I wrote itself in that way.
Yeah, no, I understand completely. And you know, when I talk to authors, as we have a number of them on the show, it's interesting to hear how they came to their conclusion of putting their book together, because it does become very personal. I find that, you know, it is, as you called, your baby, and you do take great care in trying to make sure that the message is getting out there. You know, talk to me about any success you've had in hearing from leaders that have read the book. Maybe when you could tell us a story about of a successful change in a leader from maybe that quiet leader to the loud results you talk about.
Yeah, so it's a stage of evolution, David. I've been fortunate to have some folks in that kind of close circle of quiet leaders, you know, take a read for me. So it was interesting. I shared the book with a woman who I know. She's a, you know, brilliant woman, quiet leader in the healthcare field. You know, she researches new medicines to help patients suffering from diseases we don't have cures for yet. And you know, I said, you know, you're a quiet leader. You're doing really great in your field. Take a read for me. See what I might want to change. And one of the interesting things that I learned about it, I mean, this is a woman who's super accomplished, very successful, doesn't really need, I thought, doesn't really need affirmation. But the first thing she said after she started to read the book was, "Wow, this is me, and I actually feel a lot better about being a quiet leader," because her experience was that she is the quietest person in the room, and it always feels like a way that you're an outsider in the group, right? And we have a chapter in the book about, you know, what we call double outsiders even, and these are folks that are quiet, so you're outside of the norm in one way, and then you might have a background that's not mainstream culturally or through your gender or the like, and now you're a double outsider, even a triple outsider. And so the first thing in reading the book, I said, you know, this is a woman that really doesn't need affirmation from me. She's so accomplished. And she said, "Wow, I feel a lot better reading the first couple chapters of the book, because it tells me that I don't need to hide being an introvert. It's not a bad thing. It just is. And I can start thinking about it." So that was an important change. And I think that that's one of the first things that as a quiet leader is important to do, is to really stop beating yourself up for having a personality type that represents half of us. I think the most conservative estimates out there say that half of us in the world are introverts. And that's even true amongst people that are quote unquote leaders. About half of us or even more are introverts and leaders. It's just that most of us don't like to advertise it. So we think that all leaders are, you know, really extroverts or people with more outsized personalities.
You know, it's interesting, and I think you're right. I do think there's this perception out there, and you talked a little bit about, you know, U.S. culture. Have you looked at this when it comes to cultures overseas and how that may or may not change it in other countries or even in regions of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a chapter in the book that talks about how people from different cultural backgrounds might approach this. And you know, there's good research on this. You're absolutely right, David, that, you know, on the continuum of what's an effective leader between introvert and extrovert depends on where you are in the world, right? Certain parts of the world, the accepted social phenotype is a lot more introverted than what we have here in the West. And yet still that same pattern remains, where even amongst the socially accepted standards of, say, you know, Japanese culture, people that tend to be more extroverted still are seen early on as more natural leaders by their social cohorts. Even though that person, if you put them in a continuum around the world, may be presenting more introverted, they're still more extroverted for their culture.
Do you find it to be, and I guess the question really is, more effective when you really think it through, or is it just by individual person? And the reason I ask that is stereotypes are for a reason. You know, it's interesting. We had a conversation with somebody about bias, and the truth is that bias is inherent. You know, you wouldn't have fight or flight without bias. So bias is real, and we have to have some of it. So the question is, when you think about this from a leadership perspective, should extroverts learn to be more introverted, or how would you put this all together on a continuum?
Yeah, so I think that the interesting part about it is that personality is but one aspect of ourselves. And I think that the you know, one takeaway from the book is you'll be the best leader you can be if you are who you are. So it's not about modulating yourself one way or the other. And you brought up another interesting point, David, which is, you know, is there a correlate to personality type and effectiveness? You know, do we have a bias that extroverts are better leaders because they actually are better leaders? It turns out that that's the research. There's good research on this. It turns out that that's not true. So what's interesting is that, you know, there's folks like Adam Grant, who's done a lot of research on this, and I'll, you know, give him some credit for helping me learn the ropes about publishing. I appreciate his help on that. But they've done a really interesting seminal part of work where there's really two parts to it. So one, the research is very clear that when you put an extrovert and introvert in a room per se, people will naturally see the extrovert as the person that should lead. So extroverts, you know, their creds for leadership are obvious from the get-go. The second question is the really interesting one, which is when you let both the introvert and extrovert lead, who does better? And it turns out, and there's two elements of research. One of this was in the Wall Street Journal, I think, earlier in the year. One is that when you fast forward to an extended period of time, yes, early on, people gravitate toward the extrovert as the leader. It turns out that they don't stick with extroverts as readily as they stick with introverts. So from day one, yes, extroverts will have more followers. It turns out those followers don't stick around nearly as much as for the introverts. And when you think about effective leadership, it's not just for a day. It's got to be for years sometime. And so the people you gravitate towards are extroverts. The people you follow, the introverts. That's one. Number two is Adam and his colleagues did a controlled experiment. So they looked at pizza chains. Did they have an extroverted manager, an introverted manager? And they measured which one sold more pizzas. And it turns out that particularly when you had a motivated group of employees, the introverts did a heck of a lot better than the extroverts. Sounds kind of intuitive. Extroverts kind of want to fill the room with what they're thinking. Introverts let other people talk because just of their quiet nature. And when you have motivated people and you stay out of their way, you tend to get better results.
No, you're spot on. And that, as I said, falls into the category of what we talked about before of how sales leaders, the best, are typically introverts for that very reason. You know, it's interesting. You talk about authentic leadership, and that's probably one of the largest topics I talk about, because being yourself shows through and people know when you're faking it. And so when we go back to our previous segment, we talk about trying to fake it. People know it. People feel it. People can see when something isn't just right in a presentation that you're putting forth or the way you're coming across. Though some are very good at it, over time, to your point, people will be who they are. You can't really change who they are. You can learn it. You know, I remember I had a leader, but she used to work for Disney, and she came for the head of HR for another company I worked for. And Donna Pizer is her name. And she's currently working for M&M Mars, head of their retail division in HR. And she was great. And she said, you know, you're always on stage. You are who you are. You know, it's very authentic. You got to be you. That doesn't mean if you're a jerk, you should continue to be a jerk, by the way. Authentic jerks do not work, right? But and that you're sometimes always on stage, right? When you think about Disney, if you walk in, if you're not an employee and you're not smiling, they'll replace you. That's just the way it is. Well, it's no different in the business world. There's a code or a reference of what people expect. from a business leader. And as long as it's done and that the references points are there, you can succeed carefully. And would, based on your book, I would say that that certainly makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree fully. I think it's the easy route, but not ultimately the effective one, to pretend you're something you're not. So, for example, the authentic jerk, at some point, if they're pretending not to be a jerk, they'll be found out. It's a lot harder, but ultimately more effective to do the work on yourself to not be a jerk, because that's ultimately more sustainable.
Yeah, I'm laughing because actually, believe it or not, the number one show over 10 years, still today, is The Jerk at Work. It was a show we put on, I don't remember, maybe 6 years ago. And Deb Ford was the presenter, and it still has the number one ratings. We did a Jerk at Work part two during the COVID period. It's still very good, but it still couldn't get the highest ratings that that first show did. And I think it's because everybody can relate to it, right? Everybody just said, oh my God, of course. You know, we all know one of those, and it's just, it's one of those funny things. So, you know, as we look to wrap up this segment of the show, what is one part of the book that when you think about it, or chapter or topic, that you say it's a must read? If I can't read the whole book, what is the absolute must read that I need to do if I'm working through this book?
Yeah, so I would say that one of the things that quiet leaders have the hardest time doing is getting up in front of a crowd and getting people excited. I'll tell you a story. I was going through my first IPO process for one of the companies that we had built, Sparrow. And for me, just the idea of an IPO roadshow, for those that aren't familiar, that's over a week of back-to-back presentations. And, you know, flying around to a bunch of different cities. And so the idea of having back-to-back, you know, interactions without breaks for 7 days on end was exhausting to me, number one. And number two, when you're the spokesperson, it's all on you to get people excited. You know, you have to be as excited the first day as the eighth day. And so the must-read chapter is the one about how do you do something like that as a quiet leader? How do you make presentations that really, you know, are authentic to you, but still can get people very excited? And so, you know, authenticity is a big part of that, David. It's, you know, there's a whole section of this. There's a contributor of the book. It's a gentleman named Tim Abert. And, you know, Tim had a lot of challenges growing up in terms of his speaking. And at this point, it's his raw authenticity that makes people remember his presentations years and years on end. You know, I was kind of asking around, who would be the person I should talk to that really is a quiet person that's great at presentations? And everyone said, oh, you got to talk to Tim. I leave his presentations in tears sometimes because he's just so raw, so authentic. And he uses that to really cut through and grab you. Even though, you know, I've listened to his presentations, he never gets his volume up below a normal level. And so he's talking just like this the whole time, but he's got people glued in their seats wanting to hear more. How does he do it? He's just so raw and open and vulnerable, and people really relate to that. And I think that whether you're quiet or loud, everyone can have the courage to do that.
No, that's awesome. And we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how people can get their energy up or their energy back after a 7-day presentation, because I think part of it is how do you recharge yourself? We're going to talk about that when we come back on the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And Verrill-Law.com, and of course, broadcast on WLOBRadio.com, 100.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
With the legislative landscape consistently evolving, business owners and HR managers face increased challenges running their business. Whether it be earned paid leave in your state, those retirement savings programs that are popping up around the country, or dealing with paid family medical leave, Paper Trails is here to help your business be compliant. Paper Trails consists of a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. At Paper Trails, there's no 1-800 number, and they strive to treat their clients like neighbors because they are. When a question or need arises, Paper Trails is right around the corner. Whether you're looking for accurate payroll and bookkeeping, assistance with local and federal compliance challenges, or additional services like benefit administration and employee onboarding, Paper Trails has the tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while they handle the paperwork. Visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour to learn more.
Don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust,
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Remember that the podcast of this is put up at 10 o'clock on every Saturday, East Coast time. Podcast up. Radio show is up, as also hrpowerhour.com. You can get the show three different ways. Please like it, share it, and learn. You know, today we're talking with Ankit Mahadevia. You mentioned in the last segment, and, you know, I think this is a really good topic of conversation considering what we just came out of in the COVID era. And the fact that the energy that has to be used by introverts and even some extroverts, because, of course, the continuum is not there. And the mental health issue that is a real issue across the country, the globe today. You know, in the book, you talk a little bit about how people should get recharged and a little bit about that. But tell me a little your thoughts on where we are today. And are we doing enough, or how can HR business leaders, professionals in general, really get in tune with this and help their employees?
Yeah, this is such an important topic, David. It's one of my passions in terms of trying to find better ways to help improve our world's mental health. And, you know, there's a great chapter in the book that goes into this. I think the one sentence answer for folks who are trying to help their organizations: meet people where they are. So both one of the things I've learned as we build cultures and our rhythms of operating is that you have to meet people where they are. So therefore, introverts and extroverts need different things from you as a company and as a leader. So, you know, at our companies, we have quiet space for people to sit quietly and do their work. We have open space for people to converse. When we think about meetings, we realize that extroverts can, you know, they talk to think and others think to talk. And so we try to leave space. For example, when we have an important decision as a senior team, we'll send out our thoughts ahead of time so that the introverts have time to prepare and reflect. And we have what's called the 24-hour rule so that the extroverts have time to bat those ideas around before we come to a final decision. So I think that that's really important. I think the second thing is we live in a world, particularly when we're all working more from home, where, you know, we're barraged by the ability to interact 24/7. There really is no quiet space if you've got a phone and a laptop. And I think that it's important to acknowledge that your teammates need time to shut it off, to reflect, to recharge, however they recharge, because it's exhausting, in some ways dehumanizing, to have 10 hours of back-to-back-to-back-to-back Zoom calls and then have to be connected online after that. So for me personally, I need that time after all of those Zoom calls to really reflect. You know, one way is by writing. So in some ways, kind of my coping with the new way of working from home is was writing. And so part of the book was my response to having to do so much from a social perspective. My other way is woodworking. And so you saw the number of built-in bookshelves in our house multiply. I think went from zero to six of them in the house when we got locked down. But everybody needs that. You know, I have another colleague who, you know, is a very senior executive at a large Fortune 500 corporation who knocked my socks off when he told me that he was an introvert. And I said, but you're in meetings all the time and dinners, and how do you recharge? He said, well, you know, he represents a global portfolio, so he's on a lot of planes. That plane flight, if I don't have that plane flight, I'm just not a balanced person. So everyone has this way to recharge that's authentic to them. And I think that HR leaders have to recognize and make space for that, you know, and think about how you build in breaks for people to recharge. Because otherwise, at some point, we've all done this. After around 4 p.m., you're just going through the motions. You know, it's just not sustainable. We didn't evolve as humans to be on Zoom for 8 hours without a break.
You know, I'm going to add on top of that is how do you deal with it when they're remote, right? So how do you deal with it when you don't get to see them in between Zoom calls or in between different things? How would you recommend that professionals, you know, leaders really connect with those individuals to get a true sense, not what I'll call a on-camera view sense?
Yeah. Well, and I think it depends on the personality type. So we have a section in the book that talks about how you do that. So, you know, in order for me to get an authentic sense of how an extrovert's feeling about the world, I need to build in 15 minutes to just check in with them, bad ideas around. And you know, I think that was the hardest part for some of our extroverted colleagues during the lockdown, was that they typically were used to recharging by just bantering at the office, and they didn't have that. I had an HR person within the company that was a complete extrovert. During the pandemic, we would always have these Zoom calls, and he'd always have CNN turned up so I can hear it. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Sometimes I can barely hear you over the. And then I had this aha. I said, because he's used to having someone else to talk to, and this is just his way of having another voice in the room. And so, you know, I let it go. So that's the extroverts. And for the quiet people, you give them the right venue to say how they're doing. Drop a chat, send them a note, you know, give them a meeting with an agenda so they can reflect on what they're really thinking about. And, you know, again, meet people where they are, because some people need time to reflect before they give you how they're really thinking. And some people just need to work it out with you real time.
No, that's solid advice. And as I said, the book does a nice job of giving a lot of advice for leaders. And I think it's not just about the individuals who will read it, but I think this is a great leadership development book, as you said, to really make them through. What do you think is the biggest challenge today for leadership, excluding the introvert, extrovert part at the moment? What's the biggest challenge you see?
I think the biggest challenge, and actually it does speak to the book, is being your authentic self. No matter where you are, who you're talking to, and what the business needs from you. I think the fundamental, you know, principle that I've distilled from 30 leaders is this two-part formula. One is that if you're not being you as a leader, you're not having fun. And if you're not having fun, you're not the best leader you can be. And so, you know, I think it's really hard when you got, a bunch of different people with different things that they want from you. You know, an investor may want something different from an employee who may want something different than one of your other stakeholders. You still got to be you no matter what they want you to be.
Do you think society is growing in that area, or do you think it's kind of stuck at the moment?
I think the concept of being you, in my opinion, is starting to really percolate. I do think, and it's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, I think the concept of being you when you're an introvert is kind of stuck. I think even beyond leadership, there's just some stereotypes about being a quiet person or introvert that just haven't changed since I've been thinking about this. you know, the concept that a quiet person is stuck up or plays his or her cards close to the vest or is at a party but isn't having fun and therefore doesn't like the people around them. I don't think that's changed, unfortunately, or the concept that, you know, I'll tell you a story. When, you know, when I was in early in my career and when I was in business school, I do a lot of group projects. And guess what? The quiet person always gets stuck with the high effort, low credit tasks, like taking notes or making slides. And you know what? Sometimes it's just easier for us to say, well, doesn't mean I have to talk to people. I'll do all the grunt work and you can take all the credit. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that that's really changed on the pace that we want it to. And I think we can do a lot better just by virtue of having conversations like this. I mean, there are some, you know, great books, you know, Quiet by Susan Cain, which talks to more about being a human and an introvert as opposed to kind of a business leader where we're focused. But we got to continue this conversation and kind of normalize it. You know, I'll think that we've gotten to a good place at society when all 30 of the contributors of my book say, sure, use my name. I'm proud to be an introverted leader and no one's going to think less of me.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that they're in some ways afraid to do that. And we talked about before the fear that they have about that. And hopefully the book as well as other factors will change that, because that concerns me as an individual and as a leader as well, that's how they feel and that's not how they should feel, but you can't change how they do. Right. So things in society have to change to make that more acceptable. And, you know, you've founded and or led 9 biotech companies. Have you found any of them to be different in regards to the leadership style you needed?
Absolutely. Everyone is different because you have to meet people where they are and modulate how you lead based on the needs of your folks. So the current company I'm at tended to have a lot more introverts. And so the idea of sending things for people to reflect on, the ideas of working as a team so we don't exhaust ourselves going out and sharing our mission with the world was important. In other teams that I've helped build and be a part of, there are some members of that team that were complete extroverts. And then it's meeting them where they are, giving them the chance to shine and interact with others and, you know, getting their thoughts, feelings, and buy-in in a different way than I would with an introvert. I'm still myself, but the methods of communication I use and how I really assess how people are thinking really differs based on the people that are on my team and really just kind of the nature of the larger teams that you're building. I'll give you another example where, you know, simple things, not so simple, but simple things like a company outing. Company outings are different based on the nature of who you've got. So one team I was a part of, total extroverts. They love going to the bar and doing quiz bowls and competing and being out there. And that's what you do for them. Other teams say, man, the idea of going to a loud, crowded bar is exhausting. You know, take me out of this. And so we do things like cooking classes because it allows the introvert to focus on a task rather than have to, quote, make small talk.
That's awesome. And those are great examples that we're going to finalize and have in our last segment in just a few minutes after a commercial break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
We'll be right back.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. And we have been talking about an awesome new book. That's right, awesome. Quiet Leader, Loud Results, How Quiet Leaders Drive Outcomes That Speak for Themselves. I'm talking to an introvert leader, somebody who obviously today, if you were to listen to him, you wouldn't even know he's an introvert, right? You do very good job. Ankit Mahadeva, there we go, right? Is a great conversationalist here today. And I got to tell you, if you've enjoyed the show, you just came in during the middle of it, go to hrpower.com, go to podcast and listen to this topic because it really is a good one. You know, I'm not going to hold it against you that you told me you worked in Congress. We'll just move that past that, okay? Just so you'll know. Just a question, but I won't hold you against it. The nine companies that you founded, that I have interest in. But the other, well.
David, everyone makes mistakes when they're young.
So. It's true. It's all good. We won't hold it against you. You know, as we wrap up the show today, we just have a couple minutes left. What's one final topic you think that leaders, HR professionals, C-suite professionals could take away that you haven't talked about today, but is super important for them?
Yeah, one thing that kind of under the surface we were talking about, but it's you know, four words, really. You can learn this. So we talked about why, you know, quiet leaders can be great leaders. We talked about the how-to. You might be sitting there as a quiet leader and thinking, well, I just don't have those skills. There's no way I can do this. One of the fundamental tenets that I think that we have as we build companies and lead people is people can learn this. And you know, my charge to folks that are thinking about growing in their careers or trying to build something important for the world is you may not have everything you feel you need to lead. You can learn it. And I hope that the book's a place to start. There's many other places that we guide within the book that you can continue to learn from as a quiet leader.
No, I really appreciate being on the show today. You've provided a lot of great content. If somebody is interested in getting the book, we'll certainly have it up on hrpowerhour.com so they can click on the cover and go right to, obviously, Amazon for the site. But where can they also get it?
Well, you can also go to quietleader.com and you can get the book there. And there's some great nuggets from the book within the site as well.
That's awesome. Ankit, it was a pleasure meeting you today. Please, maybe if you got another book and any other information, we'd happy to have you back on. I wish you the best and success in this book. And I'd be curious when you start your 10th company, because I have a feeling there's another one coming.
Yeah, thanks a lot, David. It was a lot of fun.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. And of course, broadcast on 100.5 FM WLOB Radio. Thank you everyone for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.